Blog Talk Radio.
Can you believe it? We're back on Blog Talk Radio after all this time. You know what I love about Blog Talk is there's no commercials. Problem is, I have no idea if I'm going over the air or not. I'm assuming I am, because nobody is saying there's no room. I mean, there's no air. There's no sound. Anyway, I thought we should do a Blog Talk show so we wouldn't be interrupted with commercials, so we could go on for as long as we wanted, basically, because the two guests that I have are amazing people. First, it's our friend. We welcome him back, Chris Hughes. And Chris, yesterday, Jody Arias was finally sentenced. I can't imagine the relief that you felt when that happened. Hold on. Where did he go? Oh, there he is. Sorry, Chris. Sorry, there you go. You're up. Now
can you hear me? I can hear you now. Yeah,
I was just saying
it was an incredible day, and you know, you talk about the relief that we felt, and it literally was a weight. I mean, you could feel a physical release and relief upon that final sentencing. It was really incredible.
Let's welcome Paul Sanders. Paul Sanders is another friend of our show on iHeart, even though we're on Blog Talk tonight. Paul, can you hear me now?
I sure can. Can you?
Oh, there we go. Much, much better. Please, everybody, you'll have to forgive me. I have not worked the Blog Talk radio, internet broadcasting system for over a year and a half, and I can't remember what I had for breakfast this morning, let alone how to operate equipment. So we might have a few, you know, little just blips here and there, but the good news is Chris and Paul, they're going to be doing most of the talking. I'm going to be sitting back and listening. Chris and Paul, I have Jody Arias's full statement, and I want to play it because I think it's important that we listen to truly the monster that she is. And there are things I need to point out. It's 4 minutes long. I apologize, Chris. Is this going to be too painful for you? Or
no, I'm Chris? Fine. It's fine. Go ahead.
Are you sure? Okay. Okay.
Oh, yeah. No problem.
Okay,
no problem.
This is Jody Arias. Give her a statement to the judge. And keep in mind, this was after one of Travis's sisters got up and just pleaded with Jody that please let's hope and pray that Travis was gone by the time you slit his throat, that he was unconscious, that he wasn't feeling the fear and the panic of what is going on. Why are you killing me? Let's just pray. I pray he was dead by then. Oh, Jody can't let that one go. This is her full statement, 4 minutes, 24 seconds.
Judge Arias has a few words to say.
Judge, I just want to respond to a few of the things that were said earlier. My legal team and I tried to settle this case on 4 different occasions before trial. We tried 2 times before the 2013 trial, and what Samantha said was not accurate. I was not the one who refused to settle. It was Travis's family who not only refused to settle and insisted on both trials, but then they bragged about it all over social media, including posting a group photo on the steps of this very courthouse, holding out all of their thumbs down, refusing to settle. As for not wanting the death penalty, it's my firm belief that death would bring me untold peace and freedom. That's my personal belief. If I died today, I would be free and I would be at peace. For years, that's exactly what I wanted. But I had to fight for my life just like I did on June 4th, 2008, because I realized how selfish it would be for me to escape accountability for this mess that I've created. I have 2 brothers, 2 sisters, several nieces and nephews, a mom, a dad, 8 aunts. Nine uncles, over 20 cousins that I've grown up with, as well as countless friends, all of whom would suffer greatly if I took my own life or if I allocated and begged for the death penalty and then got it. I did not drag Travis through the mud. I protected Travis's reputation for years. I did say he was an influential person. I kept his skeletons in the closet all to my own detriment for years. What I testified to was not false. They were not made up. They were not things that I wanted to get out into public either. But when I was on the stand, I told the truth. Your Honor was also here during the second trial when a lot of evidence came to light that supported my testimony from people that never even knew me but knew Travis. I do remember, as I testified to this, I'm sorry, I think I would have testified to this in the 2014 trial. I do remember the moment when the knife went into Travis's throat and he was conscious. He was still trying to attack me. It was I who was trying to get away, not Travis, and I finally did. I never wanted it to be that way, Judge. The gunshot did not come last. It came first. And that was when Travis lunged at me, just as I testified to, and just as the state's own detective testified 2 years ago before he and Juan got together and decided to change their story for trial. As for not being abused, maybe I wasn't badly abused as Travis and his siblings were by their parents. But I didn't consider it abuse either. I didn't consider being beaten and hit and all those things abuse. That was discipline in my family. That's how my parents were disciplined by their parents. That's why I didn't consider those things abuse. I understand now that that's abuse. So for Samantha to say that I was not a victim of abuse is wrong, because I was. And my family understands that now. And we, like my mom said, I didn't come with instructions. They did the best they could. They didn't do it because they're bad parents. They did it because they thought that they were disciplining us, and that's the best that they knew how. The most important thing I want to say is that I am very sorry for the enormous pain that I've caused the people that love Travis. I never thought I would cause so many people so much pain. I live every day wishing that I could undo what I did to Travis and wishing that I could take away their pain, just put it onto myself. To this day, I can't believe that I was capable of doing something that terrible. I'm truly disgusted, and I'm repulsed with myself. I'm horrified because of what I did, and I wish there was some way I could take it back. That's all I have.
Now, Chris Hughes, best friend of Travis Alexander, when you listen to that, do you hear how Jody Arias absolutely is so angry at Samantha and at Travis's family? That's where she shows the most emotion. She doesn't come out at the very beginning and say, I am so sorry, I caused all this pain, all of this heartache. She saves that for the very end, kind of a throwaway line. And why in the name of God did she have to say that he was alive when his throat was cut? What do you think? Words do not come to me.
Yeah, well, I'm dumbfounded by her sociopathy, her lies, and her intention to hurt people. You know, I mean, that's what that was about. The apology was an afterthought, as you indicated. And it was just all about, you know, how can I, bring continual harm to the Alexander family? What can I do to hurt them? You know, it reminds me, Trish, of the last email that she wrote Travis, at least one of the last emails that she wrote him before she killed him. They had that terrible fight that we've all seen now on social media, the Google chats, where he calls her every name in the book because he's confronting her what we think about, you know, her admission of recording that sexual
right.
conversation between the two of them. And he calls her every name in the book because she stole his journals and she slashed his tires and he's just sick of it. So after calling her every name in the book and everything else that we all read, the next morning she wrote the following email. And I don't know that these emails ever made it into court, but as you know, Sky and I were privy to read all of them.
Yes.
She said, two things you're wrong about. I didn't slash your tires and I didn't steal your journal. And, I believe she wrote that email because those are two violent things, and she wanted to defend herself against that because she was about to go commit this murder. And it's just
That's
like
right.
what we saw yesterday in the courtroom. Rather than just owning it, you know, she had to defend herself again.
Yeah.
You know, hey, four things you're wrong about. You know, Samantha, you're wrong about this, and you guys are wrong about this. And it's just,
It's so ridiculous.
It's so serious. Yeah, I didn't expect anything less. I thought it was par for the course for a lunatic.
She lived up to her lunatic status, that's for sure. And the good news is it's done now. I think we will hear from Jodi Arias every now and then when she does something in prison or somebody does something to her. But it's over, finally, and we can move on. But Travis's family will never be able to move on. Watching his siblings, you had to have a heart of stone if that didn't break your heart. Watching them all through this trial was absolutely heartbreaking beyond anything I have ever seen. Paul Sanders, you were there for most of the resentencing trial. You weren't in the actual courtroom when Jodi spoke, but you were there outside. You saw the atmosphere, and you are writing a book about this, right?
Yes, it's a. I was at the trial every day since August 14th. And the book begins on October 21st, the actual start of the retrial. And it's a daily account of everything that went on of a juror's perspective from the gallery.
Mm-hmm. And when will it be ready? When can we see this book? I can't wait to read it.
It will be up for, I'm pretty excited about this, it'll be up for a pre-sale on May 13th. And then it will be released on June 13th, pretty much on all your major social media networks.
Wonderful. We'll certainly promote that book for you, Paul, because I think it will be a great book. Everybody will enjoy it. You are quite the person to talk to. You certainly have the pulse of what people are thinking and feeling in this case as well. But then again, you're no stranger to this because you were in a high-profile case in Arizona and you wrote a book about that. What was that called? Again, please tell me, remind me.
Yes, Tricia. That was called Brain Damage, A Juror's Tale.
Right.
It's available on Amazon.com, and it's a story of being from the viewpoint of a juror in the jury box.
Perfect. And Chris, you and Sky have written a book, and as with Paul, we are waiting. You know, I feel like I'm grabbing my chair here on the edge of my seat, waiting for it to come out so I can read it. Do we know when that's going to happen, or has it come out and I've just been an idiot and missed it?
No, we'll let you know, and we'd love to chat with you about it. I'd love to get your feedback on it after you've read it, assuming you would do that.
Absolutely, I would love to.
Yeah, it's a big book. It's 140,000 words. It'll be more than 300 pages, and you know, it was one edit after another. And Paul knows. He and I have become friends through all of this, and he's a great guy. And we've shared notes, and just when you think you've got a perfect manuscript, you're appalled to find more errors.
Mm-hmm.
So, but anyway, it's been sent off. We just received the iBooks version yesterday, which is for anything Apple, you know,
yes.
For iPod, iPhone, and the rest. But and then Kindle, ironically, we haven't gotten the proof on that yet for Amazon, but that should be any day now, and that one will be up first probably within a week and a half, and then Apple maybe 2 weeks from today. So it should be anywhere you can get an ebook, you'll be able to get our book within about 2 weeks, and then there'll be a paperback coming maybe a month or so after that.
So people can have an actual copy and hold it in their hands, an old-fashioned book, which is wonderful. Chris, tell us what's in the book that is going to be compelling. I know you are going to be printing a lot of things that I think will surprise people when they finally see it in words, what was going on with you. You're going to offer up some letters and things, right?
Yeah, I think the things that people are going to really like the most about the book is just, our perspective of watching this relationship bloom. You know, we go into great detail about that night when Travis met her. You know, we met her the same night Travis did. We all had dinner together at a banquet. And then the whole relationship, as it grows, blooms, withers, and dies. So that whole story is there. From, you know, we had a front row 50-yard line seat to that whole travesty.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, my favorite part of the book, and we just went through this again, Sky and I had our computer read it to us as we were going through a final edit after we got it back from the editor. And we just sat there as we, well, the part is it's contributions from many of Travis's friends. So we didn't just want to talk about Travis from our perspective. We wanted to engage as many and include as many other people as we could who were close with Travis. And so what we asked them for was their favorite, you know, their favorite experience with Travis, like, you know, the funniest story or, you know, whatever was most memorable about Travis for them. And these stories, and there's quite a few of them, but because they're from different people, different authors, different, you know, personalities, different
right.
writing styles, it's so good. I mean, we laughed. We literally were sitting on our bed together. The computer's reading to us. She's on her computer. I'm on my computer. And we are laughing, you know, big belly mm-hmm. laughs. And then, you know, the next story, we're both crying. And then we're laughing and we're crying. And, yeah, I really think that'll be the highlight of the book, people reading that. And mm-hmm. and then there's commentary. So Sky couldn't help herself. You know, she had to go through
wonderful.
That.
Everybody loves to listen to Sky. I mean, what she says is so true.
Yeah, she is. I married way up, and anybody who knows both of us knows that is a true statement. But she, you know, she wanted to go through line by line on this crazy letter that Jody wrote to the family mm-hmm. on Travis's birthday, you know, his 31st birthday after he'd been killed, his first birthday that, you know, we didn't have him around. And I think people will like that as well, you know, just as she points out all of this, you know, just the Jody Arias-ness of Jody Arias. But I think there's a part in there, and I'm not going to say what it is, Trish, but I will say this, that I think when people see the chapter towards the end, they're going to mm-hmm. be taken aback when they see the chapter name. And then as they go through it, I think that God's going to do a miracle with a lot of people's hearts as they read this chapter. But we're really proud of it, and I can't wait until it gets out into the public.
Well, and you're going to leave me hanging with that, aren't you? That is, I'm nosy. I need to know everybody's business. But okay, I'll let you leave that hanging. Well, I know we are all looking forward to it, and it is very it's a labor of love for you and Sky. That is for certain. Before we get going into some other things that we're going to discuss tonight, I want to remind people about Travis. A lot of us feel like we know him, and that's because of you, Chris, and what you have told us about him. And we know what a good guy he was. He wasn't perfect. He was flawed like any other human being, but he was a great guy. Somebody just come into this whole mess, horrible murder. What would you want them to know if they hadn't heard any of the details about Travis and the whole situation? What would you want them to know about your friend?
Well, it's a great question, and I've had several people ask me, but the thing that I think we all do is that when somebody dies, we have a tendency to forget about the bad, and, you know, we really hyper-focus on the good, and oftentimes mm-hmm. we'll make them in their death larger than life.
Yeah.
And we realized the cool thing about Travis was that we knew while he was alive, and we even discussed while he was alive, that he was larger than life
mm-hmm.
as he lived, you know. So the thing I can say about Travis was always the life of the party, always so concerned about other people, you know, everywhere we went. I don't care if we went, you know, to go and grab a taco or if we went to get gas, Travis made the person who took our money feel good about themselves. You know, they would go home that night, and on an 8-hour shift, they may not have anything else to think about, but they'll remember Travis Alexander because he made them laugh. You know, he gave them a compliment. And, you know, that's just who he was. You know, he was very silly, very goofy.
Mm-hmm.
Could be incredibly crass. You know, he could get away with things that some guys might get punched in the face for, you know?
Oh, that's, surprising.
You know,
give us an example. I want to hear this. You can do it. It's Blog Talk. You can say anything you want.
Well, he, I can't give you the words that he said, but for example, he's, you know, he could flirt. He flirted with everyone. You know, he would mm-hmm. flirt with old women, young women, big women, you know, skinny women, like pretty, not so pretty. Like, and his intent was not to flirt. His intent was to make them laugh. It was to make them feel good about themselves. But, you know, he would, he could flirt with a married woman right in front of her husband, and the husband and the woman and Travis would all have a, you know, a big belly laugh over it because it was Travis. It was like, and I don't mean a stranger, you know, I mean a woman, you know, who he knew, and the husband knew Travis and everything. But that's what I mean by that. And we would say it all the time. We're like, if that was anybody but Travis, they would have got punched in the mouth. Yeah, but Travis, that's what it made him, is he was just so funny. But then he also had this, and I think we've talked about this before, this deeply spiritual side of him that people just loved, because he could talk about any religion for as long as you wanted to, any religious or spiritual conversation or emotional conversation. And people loved that about him. But also, you know, the irony of this whole abuser story, you know, that he's somehow abusive and, you know, whatever else, emotionally, physically. Travis helped at least three women that we know get out of abusive situations. I mean, he was somebody who was deeply concerned about that because of the way he was raised. You know,
right.
Some
he
kids
abusive.
That are physically
he had an
or
abusive,
otherwise.
Right, abusive family, parents abusive and just awful. But I'm sorry,
right,
I didn't mean to interrupt.
Some people, no, you're fine. I was just going to say, some people who are abused, you know, they become abusers. We understand that cycle, but we also know that some people who are abused create a no tolerance for that. And, you know, and that was Travis. He had a zero tolerance for those types of things, and was somebody who helped a lot of people out of bad situations. Yeah, but I could go on and on and on. I mean, just, you know, he was such a cool, special guy. And as you said, he was a human. And you know, we say that almost like we're excusing him for something. And it's like, you know, mm-hmm. I just don't think that, I mean, we don't even, you know, we're all human. Of course, you know, we don't have to, we're not talking about Jesus, you know.
Yeah.
We're talking about a human. There's no need for us to add that little, you know, thing. He was human. We're all human. And, mm-hmm. you know, but he was special. And we miss him so bad. And, but I will say this, that writing the book was incredibly therapeutic for us, you know, to be mm-hmm. able to spend so much time thinking about him and letting the tears flow freely and talking about him and, you know, our favorite memories. And, you know, it's been a very special time, and God knew what he was doing when he, you know, prompted us to write this book, because it's helped us to heal our hearts.
We have a question from our chat room from Sulamith. Did Travis's family contribute any stories for the book? How do they feel about the book?
Well, that is such a good question. We talked about this the last time we were here.
Mm-hmm.
The family, there was some rumors out there that the family was not supportive of the book at all. And, you know, and that's just not the case. You know, I mean, we gave Stephen an advanced copy. He read it. He absolutely loved it. And he tweeted, you know, on Twitter, and I can't remember what he said, but I read the book and I loved it, and everybody's going to love this, and Travis would have been so proud.
Mm-hmm.
And of course we've had conversations with some of the other siblings that are in favor of the book, but nobody has, certainly not nobody said anything to me about it, you know. Nobody said,
well, that's good.
Hey, yeah, don't write this book. And here's the thing, Trish, when people read the book, including the Alexanders, not all of them have read it, but when they do, you know, it'll be what's not to love. I mean, if somebody's going to honor my brother or my sister by writing a book about them, you know, somebody who knew him well or her well,
mm-hmm.
you know, more power to you. Thanks for taking that time
right.
to do that, you know, and it's important to us to do that. So, yeah, there's nothing that I know of.
Well, that is good to hear, because that rumor was out there for a long time that there were a couple of them that were very upset. But I do feel like the way you describe the book, it will make Travis live forever. He'll come alive for everybody who reads your pages. Chris, we're going to just check in with Paul here for a bit, and then I'll bring you both in to talk about the jury and a few other things. Paul?
Yes.
In how yesterday you were outside the courtroom when all of this was going down. Tell us about the atmosphere. What was going on? Any interesting little side tidbits that you have for us?
It was interesting because the whole trial, I've been there every day. I've been through lottery after lottery, and somehow I've ended up in the courtroom every time. And yesterday I went in and didn't get picked in the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of reacting negatively or being upset or this is the worst thing that happened, I really felt that God put me in the position to be right where I was. And
mm-hmm.
to sit out there we were right outside the courtroom doors. We had all met in the public overflow room. 100 mm-hmm. or so people showed up. And I had put out a worldwide memo, here's what's going to happen when you come into the courthouse. And it played exactly as I thought it would play. There was heavy security, armed guards. The head of security spoke to the whole room. And then they said there were 14 seats available, which was normally it's 21. And ironically, there were 5 empty seats in the gallery. But they said, we've done the lottery, everybody step outside. And I sat next to Barbara Lance, who is the mother-in-law of Detective Flora. And we were really united over the death of Tony.
Mm-hmm.
He was Detective Flora's son. He had a Boy Scouting accident right in the middle of the retrial. And for about a week there, Detective Flora's wasn't there. And the pain that the courtroom felt, this mm-hmm. ancillary pain because of what he had gone through. He's just been a man of fortitude and strength this whole trial and, you know, going back 7 years. Well, I sat out there with her, with her daughter, with Kathy Brown, the number one Travis Alexander supporter, been supporting mm-hmm. the family since day one. And I've got to tell you, it was really, really special. The energy outside was positive. We had been warned that there was that Jody Arias supporters were going to show up and mm-hmm. start some negative things. And what I had really told everybody via the webpage was, do not engage no matter what. Because at this point,
right.
it's always been about Travis Alexander. And
mm-hmm.
Jody Arias shouldn't really exist in our minds anymore. What we want the good out of this trial is the good memories of Travis. So I'm really
mm-hmm.
grateful that Chris and Sky did this book. But to sit out there and watch, and all of us sitting out there on social media, they had no live stream in the courthouse, and we were glued. We went through periods of shock, of surprise, we saw Jody Arias as evil as she's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
We an immense amount of respect for the prosecution team, and when the result came in, it was really what I think this was on Good Morning America this morning, but ultimately we got the best result, even better than the death penalty. And
mm-hmm.
Chris and I had spent an afternoon talking about that during deliberations. And I am so glad we had that conversation, because when that verdict came down, or when the sentencing came down from Judge Stevens, the relief, I think Chris said, you know, in this case, you know, good trumps evil. And it did. And the energy outside was amazing. We weren't screaming banshees. We weren't many of us were brought to tears, and there was relief, and we felt that justice had won, and we also felt that the Travis Alexander family had won in the minimal way they can win.
Yeah, as much as they can, right.
Yeah, there could be no good ending in a murder trial, but in all scenarios, this was the best scenario possible, and it was an amazing experience.
We're talking with Paul Sanders. Paul has been at the resentencing trial of Jody Arias pretty much every day except for the last day, but Paul was there on hand to offer support along with about 100 other people who came in just to hear Jody and hear the family speak. Also with us is Chris Hughes. Chris and his wife Skye were Travis's best friend. I fully believe that Jody Arias was on her way to kill them after she killed Travis Alexander. And in your book, you're going to, I'm sure, talk about that terrifying time and the times that Jody was listening at your door and how she scared you. And all of that's going to be in your book that's coming out. Are you going to give a copy to the jurors, do you think? Is there any way you could get them a copy?
Yeah, absolutely. We'd love to give them a copy, and in fact, I'm going to reach out to somebody who I think might have all their contact information. But we had a barbecue with the family and the prosecution and Detective Flores, and Deanna was there, and Skye and I, and the jurors, if I didn't mention that, last night, and it was awesome. I mean, everybody was happy.
Let's hear. Yeah, tell us what went on.
It was just festive, you know. I mean, there was not, for years, anytime, you know, anybody's gotten together, it's just this heavy feeling that's always in the background. And, you know, we're always looking for, you know, what's next and when's the next thing that's going to happen. And for the first time, it was like it was done. And that was kind of the purpose of the get-together was it's finished. We're going to get our lives back. And everybody was jovial, and people were laughing and telling stories. And my highlight of the evening was talking with the jurors. You know, they were all sitting around one table, and the event was catered, and we were enjoying some incredible Mexican food. And we laughed and cried.
Did the juror that voted against the death penalty, was she there?
No, of course not.
Okay, I just wanted to. Just checking because I thought
that would make
for some interesting conversation. So, but she wasn't there.
Yeah, no, I don't know that she was. No, she wasn't there, and I had an interesting discussion with the with.
Yes, tell us about that discussion, please. That's what I was going to ask you. What have you talked to them about this person?
Well, I had a discussion with the. Deliberation foreman, and that was really interesting. And they were just saying how, and we heard this a little bit in their press conference that they did immediately after the hung jury. But they just talked about how manipulated they felt and how upset they were when they read those famous emails, you know, that Skye and I and Travis wrote back and forth. That the defense, used as kind of the keystone of their. Second go round,
right?
But yeah, some people believed it. They believed that Travis perhaps had been emotionally abusing Jody because of our emails and because of those Google chats that transpired after Jody revealed something terrible and after
terrible
Travis
too,
realized who and what she really was. Yeah, but. One of the things that they told me, which was so interesting, and I think this group of people should write a book. I mean, I'd want to be the first to read it. But they said that they had a stack of text messages that went throughout their relationship, not just from May 2008 forward, which is where Travis was just, on a warpath, but for the rest of their relationship. And what they did is they had one of the female jurors read Jody's text, and one of the male jurors read Travis's text, and they literally went back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And I wish I knew her name, but one of the jurors told me, she said, it was beautiful. She said Travis was so good to her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she said, we felt so betrayed and so manipulated because they took this Google chat, you know, some of these things that Travis said from May forward, you know, after his eyes had been opened, that he was with a sociopath,
right.
that they took all of that and they got mileage through the entire, through both trials, you know, and would lead everybody to believe that, oh my gosh, this guy Travis, you know, he's got a problem holding his tongue. And it's like, no, they could not believe how kind he was to her. And in fact, one of them even said, even when he should have gotten upset, he didn't get upset with her.
Right. Right. And that, of course,
the
defense doesn't want you to
have those discussions.
Yeah, the defense doesn't want you to know those things. And I can imagine the jury would be very, very upset because they want to do their job correctly. And the only way they can do that is to have the whole truth. And let's face it, a trial jury is never about the whole truth. It's about holding back and letting what truth you want in. And unfortunately, that's part of our system that needs to change, but I have no idea how to go about changing it. Chris, where do you go from here? I mean, this has just been a part of your life every day since that horrible day that Travis was killed in 2008. Are you ever going to get back to normal, do you think?
Yeah, I think we're, you know, I feel like I'm right back to normal right now. I mean, Sky's at her mom's right now, prepping for two baby showers that, you know, a sister and a sister-in-law, and so they're having a blast together. We're texting right now. We're texting
Good.
Back and forth. But, you know, I'm home with the kids, and I feel a whole new energy about life. I really do. I feel like I've got a new lease on life. I don't have that negative energy. I'm not looking for, you know, another trial, another something to have to sit through. And I'm going to get busy in my business. And, you know, I've got another book that I've wanted to write for a long time. It's called You Can, Your Choice. And it's, you know, it's all about making positive change in life. And I'm going to pull that off the shelf and finish that. And, you know, just raise our babies and live as normal life as we can.
And you do believe you'll see Travis again, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And that's what has made this so much more bearable. I mean, I can't imagine not having, you know, a really convicted belief in the afterlife and having to confront a tragedy like this. It would be unbearable. You know, it's hard enough even with a strong belief in an afterlife and in, you know, the fact that relationships continue when we leave this life. And so, yeah, I can't wait, you know, I can't wait for that. And Travis will be one of the first people I look up. Hopefully he's there when I cross over. I want to give him a big bear hug.
I'm sure he will be, and I do believe, if I can make this comment for you, that your religion, the LDS religion, has really, really held you through all of this. You leaned on that a lot, didn't you?
Yeah, for sure. And it's interesting, you know, because Mormons believe that we show our love for God by keeping the commandments. You know, we believe the Bible. You know, I mean, we believe that. Those things that are taught there, we try our best to do those things. You know, Paul talked about show me your faith by your works. You know, we don't believe works save us. We believe that the grace of Christ saves us, period, end of story. However, we believe that we show our love to God by the good that we do. And, you know, some people in the church erroneously believe that, oh, well, because Travis was quote unquote sinning and he had made these and I shouldn't say some people, there's a very small group of people that don't understand the doctrines of Christ and don't understand the doctrines of the Bible and don't understand the doctrine of grace and on and on and on, but who would say, oh my gosh, are you worried about where, you know, Travis is going to be? Are you worried about his eternal salvation? And, you know, I'm not at all, because Travis is somebody just like you, Trish, and just like me and everybody else listening. Travis was somebody who made mistakes, but what made Travis very unique was that Travis was really good about owning those mistakes, and he was really good about repenting, and I know without any question at all that he had a great relationship with his Creator and with the Lord, and that had he been given an opportunity to make amends and to get back on the right track and come back into the light, as it were, mm-hmm. then he would have done that, you know? He would have done that. And so I really believe that Jody, being a new convert to the church and someone who didn't do it for the right reasons and somebody who was
yes.
not grounded in the doctrines,
yes.
mm-hmm. that I really do believe that she thought, well, I'm going to go in there, I'm going to seduce him, I'm going to have sex with him, which is against God's law, you know, and premaritally, and then I'm going to kill him, I'm going to go to hell for killing him, and he'll go to hell for having sex with me, and we'll be together forever, you know. I mean,
oh,
it's just
God.
I can just see, yeah, that twisted, you know, third grade understanding
mm-hmm.
of these doctrines, and she'll be sorely mistaken when she crosses over, I think.
We have a question from the chat room, and I think this is an important one. Do you think that Travis was fearing Jody toward the end? Did he understand how dangerous she really was?
Yeah, he did. And he talked about that with Reagan and other people, you know, even with us. One of the things he wrote on his blog, I believe in May, before he was killed, was how he was sick of the dating life and, you know, wondering if the girl that's on the other side of the table was an axe murderer. You know, he
mm-hmm.
had made comments like that. Sky told him fairly early on in his relationship that, you know, she was afraid that we were going to find him chopped up in Jody's freezer. I mean, she literally made that comment
wow.
back in 07, a full year before Travis was killed. But he couldn't see it. I mean, Travis said, until the end, I will say that, and I'll answer the question here in a moment, but, you know, Travis in 07, he would say things like, you know, there's nobody more honest than Jody. You know, that's a direct quote. He also said... that Jody, yeah, exactly, right? That Jody, mm-hmm. quote, wouldn't hurt a fly. So, I mean, he was, she had him hook, line, and sinker. And one of the things we write about in the book is how Sky had spoken with an expert on sociopathy. And she said that when you get somebody who's really bad, who's a real true sociopath all the way down the line, and then add the fact, you know, that she had borderline personality and who knows what other mental illness, that the reason these people are so dangerous is because they get into your heart and head and they're controlling you the entire time and
mm-hmm.
you have absolutely no idea. So towards the very end, yes, it's clear in that Google chat that he got what she was all about, and he had said to a few people that he was afraid of her, that she'd been stalking him. And some of the enemies of Travis and maybe some Jody supporters have said, well, clearly he wasn't afraid. And even the defense, I think, postulated this, that clearly he wasn't afraid, because if he was afraid of her, why did he keep going back to her? And
mm-hmm.
And he answers that question in those Google chats. He says to her, I am addicted to you.
Right.
You know, he's like, whatever you're going to do, go ahead and do it, because you're going to do it anyway, and I'm addicted to you. He's like, I wish you'd leave me alone. Why me? Why'd you have to ruin my life? You know, I was such a good guy. And by the
mm-hmm.
way, Trish, and I don't know why this didn't come out in the trial. I don't understand all the nuances there. But it's like, you know, if this guy was a bad guy at all, if he was beating her up, even if he was verbally abusing her, you know, prior
mm-hmm.
to May, prior to finding out all this disgusting stuff about her, when he's saying to her, why me? Why'd you have to ruin my life? I'm such a good guy. You know, you're the devil's daughter. You're the worst thing that's ever happened to me. You're a sociopath. You know, like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's her time to say, hey, buddy, you're a pedophile.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
Hey, buddy. You know, you're a wife beater, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like don't try to turn this around. You know, I got stuff on you, Travis Alexander, right? That
you're
was
not
her
a,
time.
Right,
that
you're not a good
life.
Guy. Yeah. And she didn't do it cuz it
exactly.
didn't
Exactly. You're not a good guy.
Right.
That's right. And what did she say? She continued to say, "You're right. You're right. My parents aren't proud of me. I know. You know, I can't
mm-hmm.
change. I don't know why I'm like this." Right? So that's
right.
real life stuff. Everything, you know, that we saw in trial, that was all make-believe. That was all manufactured.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes.
Yeah, those Google chats are really telling. But, yeah, he knew, and he was trying so hard to get away from her. And, in
mm-hmm.
fact, one of his journal entries says, I went a whole day without talking to Jody.
Yep, Jody Freeday.
You know?
God, Jody Freeday.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah, it was a Jody Freeday. And it's just like, I mean, he was, and he says in the Google chats, he's like, why'd you have to call? Like, you knew that if I heard your voice, that I'd be right back there, you know? I mean, just, gosh, it breaks my heart because he was in so deep. And he started to get scared towards the end, but he never really fully understood what he was dealing with, you know, not like we do. We all know because we've seen this whole thing unfold, but
right.
Yeah, it's just so tragic.
Did he reach out to you directly and say, I'm so scared, help me get away from her? Did he ever come to you and talk to you about that?
No, he didn't, but, you know, we've talked about Skye's intuition in the past.
Yeah.
One of the things that Skye reached out to him days before the murder, before we were all supposed to be in Mexico together, and she said to him, Travis, she was leaving messages, but she was like, you know, I don't know what's wrong. I don't know what's going on, but you need to leave there and you need to come stay with us.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, call me. And he didn't call her back. And she sent a text and she's like, Travis, if you don't call me back right now, I'm throwing my baby in the car and I'm going to drive to Arizona and I'm going to get you and bring you back here and you're going to stay with us. Because Skye knew, I mean, one of the chapters in the book is called Unraveling. It's titled Unraveling, and it's Jody Arias was unraveling, but also Travis was unraveling.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'd had that terrible breakup with Lisa, and now he finds out Jody's this crazy woman, but he can't get away from her, and she continues to stalk him and control his life. But then he called Skye back immediately. He's like, hey, okay, you know, like everything's fine. Yeah, and Skye says, no, everything's not fine, Travis. She's like, just come, you know, just get in your car and just drive here. He's like, what are you worried about? And I can't remember exactly what Skye said to him, but they basically agreed that, you know, hey, Skye, it's okay and I'm fine. And, you know, unfortunately, it was, I don't know how many more days later, he was dead.
Don't you think, though, that if he would have come to your house and stayed there, eventually she would have found a way to kill him? I think she was out to kill him because she couldn't have him. So, it, you know, unless she was able to...
No, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, unless she was arrested or he moved to another country, which maybe that's what he would have had to have happened in his life, to get away from him and to be safe. She zeroed in on him and wanted him dead. Chris, we're going to come back to you in just a moment. We're talking with Chris Hughes, Travis Alexander's best friend, and also Paul Sanders, author who has been at the courthouse for inside the courtroom for most of the sentencing retrial. And, Paul, what are you going to do next? I asked Chris. This has taken up so much of your life. What is scheduled? What's on the schedule for you after, since Jody Arias is now done, toast? We've put a fork in her. She is done. She's put away. What are you going to do?
The next 2 months is going to be consumed with the book, Why Not Kill Her? And then I'm going to put out a third edition of Brain Damage, A Juror's Tale. And then after that, I pretty much have an open calendar. I was considering doing the Colorado Theater shooting trial. And part of the reason I do this is I've learned throughout this whole process that what I do does a lot of good for people. Not jurors per se, but for people on the outside looking in. And anyway, I considered the Colorado shooting trial, but there's a large amount of media restrictions. There's no tweeting at the trial and so on and so forth. But what is, there's two trials coming on the horizon, the Stay family, which I'm really interested in. And then the other one is Robert Durst is somewhere on the horizon. Whatever trial it is, it'll definitely be a good trial. But Robert Durst is, there's something, it's a really twisted case. And there's, with three people dead, there's an unbelievable amount of victims involved because it's not just the victim themselves. It's the ripple effect to all the people that survive it. and
Robert Durst is a whole new type of crazy. He's on a level of crazy that we haven't visited yet. So you're right, that would be very fascinating.
So that's what's on the horizon at this point in time. But right now my head is in a computer every day, and we're working the rewrite of Why Not Killer. I also post, as I do the rewrite, it's kind of a neat thing, but to involve people as I do the rewrite, I do post every chapter on the 13thJurorMD.com, and I add a picture that's appropriate to the trial or what have you. And it's basically, it's a first rendering, but I think it's a really, really good piece. So beyond that, I don't know beyond January or June 13th, but that's where I'm at right now.
Give us that address again, because you broke up a little bit in my ear. Maybe it's just my brain slowly fading. But what was the email, I mean the website address?
Is the 13thJurorMD.com. MD stands for Marissa Duvall when I was a juror on that trial. So, again, I will write from, I always write from a juror's perspective. So, and this was a fascinating experience. If you separate the tragedy and look into the mechanics of the law and everything that happened and how it climaxed in the end and how we actually got a good ending in the end, it was really a fascinating trial in a lot of ways. But when you look at it from the juror's perspective, it made it really interesting. Just a quick story. I was able to talk to the a number of jurors from this trial, and I've got to tell you what these 11 of the deliberating jurors are the most amazing number of people. They are just well-grounded, good people. I spent a long time early yesterday morning with the jury foreman, and as Chris said, he is a remarkably intelligent, bright, well-seated, reasonable man. And if I haven't said it before, I really want to thank these jurors and the jurors around the country who do all the small cases for their service. These guys really, really made a sacrifice, but what a great group of people.
That's good to know. And I hope they do write a book, because I'll tell you what, everybody would buy it, because this is one case that has just captivated the world, and I can say that as sleuth, because people from all over the world are still posting and will post about this case. It'll be like Kaylee Anthony and Casey Anthony. We will not shut those forums down. They'll still be up, even though both of them are going on with their lives, totally different directions, obviously. But anyway, Paul, I want to thank you for your time. You know you can always come on my iHeart show on Thursdays. And I'll be doing these special blog talk shows whenever something big comes up, so we don't have to worry about commercials. We can take our time. And, heck, we can even swear. We can even say, oh my flipping heck, if we want, on blog talk. Because, you know, it's free of FCC rules. And, Chris, give us your web address, please, so people can go and visit you and see what you're up to.
Well, the address for the
or your Facebook or whatever you have. Yeah, whatever you have.
Yeah, well, the address for the book is Our Friend Travis .com, and people can get on the list there. We've promised that the people who are on that email list, that they'll get a head start. We're going to let them know first before we let social media or anybody else know. So if you want to be the first to know, you can go there. Mm-hmm. And my personal blog, which is all personal growth, personal development focused, is C.S. Hughes, HUGHES.com.
Got it. Okay. Gentlemen, thank you. This has been a long, strange, crazy trip. It's not over yet. Your books are coming out. Everybody is anxious to read them. So just come to me, Mama Trish, and we'll get out all kinds of publicity for you as much as possible. Let's make the world aware that you both are writing incredible books that need to be read to understand what really happened in this case. Chris and Paul, thank you so much. And everybody, don't forget, Thursday night, 7 o'clock, 5 o'clock Pacific and 8 o'clock Eastern Time on iHeartRadio.com. It's my show. You go to TrueCrimeRadio.com, and then you can get to iHeart. It's really complicated. Always just remember TrueCrimeRadio.com, and your life will be perfect once again. Take care, gentlemen, and everybody. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tricia.